Killing Ground, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
Part 1, 1942. Chapter 1, No Reprieve. Any naval dockyard in the midst of a war was a confusing place for a stranger, and Rosyth, cringing to a blustery March wind, was no exception. Every dock, basin and wharf seemed to be filled, ships being repaired, others so damaged by mine or bomb that they were only useful for their armament or fittings, all of which were in short supply. Sub-Lieutenant Richard Ayres paused to stare down into one such basin at an elderly escort vessel, or what was left of it. She had once been a living ship, but now she was gutted down to and beyond the waterline. In the hard light, Ayres could see the blistered paintwork where men had once lived and hoped. From all the damage, it was a marvel anyone had still been alive to get her home. Black shadows swayed and dipped over the battered hulk as gaunt cranes lifted pieces to be saved and dropped the rest in rusty piles on the dockside. It was as if they were doing the destroying, he thought, like untidy prehistoric monsters with an abandoned carcass. He turned up the collar of his blue raincoat and shivered in the biting wind, which came down from the northwest to change the face of the Forth into a miniature sea of white horses. A dismal place to many, perhaps, but to Sub-Lieutenant Ayres, who was 19 years old and about to join his first ship, as an officer anyway, it was like the culmination of a dream he had once not dared to hope for. His only time at sea had been spent in a tired, overworked patrol vessel named Sanderling, for the compulsory 3 months all officer candidates had to complete before being handed over to HMS King Alfred. There, youthful hopefuls were expected to be turned into officers in a further crammed 3 months before being dropped right into it and packed off to war. Except that the poor little Sanderling, with her solitary 4-inch gun and a few anti-aircraft weapons, had been worked so hard she had spent much of Ayres' allotted time either having a boiler clean or lying at a buoy, while Harris dockyard men tried to find out what had broken down this time. Ayres shivered again. He had been 2 days getting here from the south of England, trains that never arrived, another held up for hours in an air raid. None of it helped. He turned his back on the old ship and looked at the others looming from their moorings or peeping over the edge of a dock or wharf. Every kind, from powerful cruisers to the mine-sweeping trawlers which had once fished in these waters for herring and cod. A coat of grey or dazzle paint changed anything into a man of war, just as a building which had once been a swimming bath and pleasure centre in Hove had become a training depot where officers were manufactured overnight. Boots grated on stone, and he saw a tall chief petty officer in belt and gaiters pausing to stare at him as if unsure whether or not he should bother. "Can I help?" He cleared his throat, and in those few seconds he took in all that there was to see, a brand new cap and raincoat, the neat little suitcase, and, most of all, Ayres' pleasant open features. He added, "Sir?" Ayres produced his piece of paper. You never moved in the Navy without that. It had been almost the first lesson he had learned when he had been groping his way towards his goal. "I'm joining the Gladiator, Chief." He, too, was studying the other man. Old, probably retired when the war had erupted across Europe and their world had changed out of all recognition. Gladiator. Just the name seemed to roll off the tongue like something familiar, special. The Chief Petty Officer glanced at him again. "You're Mr. Ayres, then? I was expecting you yesterday." It sounded like an accusation. Ayres flushed, something he still did far too easily. "Yes, but she was supposed to be at Leith, and when I got there..." The other man nodded. "Leith is full. They moved your ship here as soon as her overhaul was done." He made up his mind. "I'll call her up and get a boat sent over. She's out there with another of her class." He looked away. "About the only two of them left now, I shouldn't wonder.